Hey, what's up, everybody? This intro is being recorded after we just wrapped up the last day, the round of 16. We got to all four of the groups here for WCS. I'm in my hotel room next to the venue. I'm packing my bags in a second when I'm done recording this. And then I am taking a bus down with everybody tomorrow morning to the airport, fly into LA, and get ready for BlizzCon finals. We're about to wrap the year up. So let me think here. I got the chance to sit down and talk with Nathanius. We had a free day before the broadcast started, and he was nice enough to give me his time. I really enjoyed this episode. Nate always cracks me up. This guy is so fucking funny. And we talked about a whole bunch of different stuff. So I think you're going to really enjoy this episode. And then I'm going to try to do some more recordings. I can't guarantee who I'm going to get, but I have only one day of broadcasting at BlizzCon. So I'm going to try to get the little podcast studio set up in Los Angeles in my hotel room. And then I'm going to try to snag people and get some extra recordings. We may be increasing more and more the frequency of the stuff we can put out because I'm getting more and more free time as all the esports events wrap up for the year here. December, I basically don't have any work, so I should have extra time to do some more recordings and sit down with some more people. If you guys are enjoying this, as I always say, the Patreon support is really appreciated. We now have, for Patreon supporters, an after show, essentially. It's a private podcast I have with the guest that continues on. And honestly, this podcast I did with Nate, the after show, I thought was even better than the actual podcast we did for the general public. So if you enjoy this, I would encourage you to support us on Patreon and check that out. And let me think here. Is there anything else I need to say? I think we pretty much got it. Okay, guys, I'm out of it. I got to pack my bags. Enjoy this podcast with Nathanius. So yeah, man, you're here in Seoul now, finally.
That's nice.
I know. Last time you were here, I don't know if we were recording that earlier, but you were in first time you were in South Korea, I should say, you were in Pyeongchang.
Yeah.
With me.
I went straight from the airport to there, and I did not really get to see, I didn't get to see any of actual Seoul.
And we were in that weird hotel.
Yeah, the one that they like built just for the Olympics. It was like this giant, massive, beautiful, it didn't fit at all. It was like going to like Poitiers or one of those other really small towns that we did and be like, all right, let's build a 5-star hotel.
I always wonder what happens to these cities after the event's done, because whenever there's the Olympics or some major like World Cup or something, they'll build all these hotels and all this stuff that is there only for the purpose of...
It's just for that.
For that moment, and then it's like everybody leaves.
It's not like there's
remember
a bunch
that,
of...
The hotel we were at, remember they didn't have their shit together so badly at the Pyeongchang place? We would order a drink, and it would take, I swear to God, 20, 25 minutes for them to bring it. This is a bottle of beer.
It took you 20 minutes to get your beer, and the mojito I had was the worst mojito I've ever had in my entire life.
I think that whole area in Pyeongchang was like... Because that's an odd part of South Korea. That's this mountainous area. It's actually, I think, maybe the poorest district in South Korea, kind of remote and out there. And I was under the impression that all the staff there had no idea how to work in a hotel. Because every time we'd order anything, they would all look at each other like, what? Like a glass of water? And everybody would start making eye contact with each other. And then they'd kind of scuffle away and then...
You had the impression that there was just like you went into like a small town. You're like, look, half the people who live in this town now need to become like experts in fine dining and hotel management.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, okay, let's do it for the Olympics. And then after that, it's like, what's with this hotel now? It's like, well, no one's ever going to come here again, probably, until we eventually have this happen in maybe 40 years. Who knows?
Yeah. So we got to have some other major event come through here. So what is it like to be in Seoul now compared to Pyeongchang now that you've only been here for 24 hours, right?
Well, there's a lot. I guess there's a lot that I could technically say there. I mean, Pyeongchang was, I think my example is like, it's like the Scranton, Pennsylvania of South Korea. Like, it was pretty much like, when we were in Pyeongchang, we went to like that Korean barbecue place, and it was like the owners had their kids like school stuff sitting out, and like it was just like this really small, homely feel. And already coming out here, I mean, I love cities. I love the city vibes. I get a little bit of New York vibes out of here, and I love it. It's awesome.
Yeah, man, this is right where I work, man. You're going to shadow your favorite caster, Tasteless, to his studio?
That's my dream.
We're going to be working in the Freak Up studio?
They're like, Nate, you can finally come to Seoul and see everything. And I'm like, well, what you mean is I can finally come hang out with Tasteless on his home turf. I can have Grandpa Tasteless show me around, and you keep me safe, keep me from getting lost.
Is there anything you want to do while you're out here, or is it just like eat Korean food, drink soju?
That. You know what I want to do? You want to do again that I really liked?
What?
Like, we got to find like another chicken bar, man.
Chicken Hoff?
Dude, Dude, when we did that in Pyeongchang, I thought that was awesome. And I'm like, that's what I need to do out here.
Do you know that there are, excuse me, there are more chicken hoffs in Seoul than there are McDonald's in the world? Yeah, that's an actual stat.
That's I don't know enough to dispute it. I'm just going to go with you on that.
There's so many fried chicken places out here.
And they're so good.
They're good.
I just went to a random place. I was like, I landed in Seoul. I was like on my way to the hotel. Like Roddy flies in like tonight or something. So this was like yesterday. I'm like, okay, well, I want to get food. Like, where is everybody? And of course, the hand of God himself came down rapid. He's like, I can get you to fried chicken, Nathan. as a fellow obese American, I am ready to show you the light. And that was the first thing I did. It was incredible. Like, it's just everywhere too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're out here for what, a week? And then of course we're going to go to BlizzCon together.
Yeah.
But normally you're streaming. How much does this fuck you when you're not streaming because you're overseas? Because I've heard from people that they lose tons of subs.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of comes with the territory, right? Like when I'm negotiating for events, something that I take into account with like my rate or whatever, like these days I'm going to be spending out and whether I could stream there. Nice thing about it is when I was actually in Pyeongchang, when I had off time, I was able to do a little bit of streaming because you guys have amazing internet infrastructure here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the cell networks are also fantastic. So if I want to just shoot the shit walking down the street, I can at least do that. But yeah, that's one of the harder parts about doing any of these events because it's a whole week gone, and with how far away it is as well, the time travel spent. And like I kind of build, I plan everything around that stuff. So it doesn't like have a real like noticeable impact. But I know that after BlizzCon's over, it's going to be like, all right, I got to grind. Can't miss more than one day a week, basically. I take a little bit of time off. But usually recovering like number-wise from events like this as a streamer is probably at least like 3 weeks of just going at it before you're like back to where you were before the event.
Is that stressful?
A bit. Yeah, it's a bit stressful. I think for me personally, the biggest thing that I've done to help combat that in the last like year or two is I don't know how much you've seen, but like I've been doing like different games and stuff, like filling in the time. So, you know, there's not a StarCraft tournament every weekend in the United States. So like kind of expanding the commentary side of things and putting more of my, at least my like financial burden on that rather than the stream, makes missing the stream a little bit less stressful.
Is there a way that Twitch could fix that? It seems like such an... For instance, like with Patreon, we have almost nobody pull out, but I guess the expectations are a little bit different because it's like I release an episode every 2 weeks. We may go up to once a week, but it's odd that like with streaming, people seem to pull out the moment that you're just not there. Even if you've been talking on your stream saying, guys, I'm going to be back. Right after this event.
That's a really interesting thing to consider because you put out a lot more content on a platform like that.
Yeah.
But Twitch is very, and I love streaming, but it's a very like instant gratification based platform. So if you're not on constantly providing that content, a lot of people contribute for like the attention that they're going to get or, you know, seeing the alerts or like watching the live reaction of someone. Whereas for your Patreon, they know that they're supporting content that they like and they're going to get more of it. But I think the lack of the live element actually makes it more stable in that way, where people's expectation of what they're getting for their money is very set. Whereas on like Twitch, like if your streamers, you're like, oh yeah, he's at this event, but like why would I go make sure that I'm still subbed, right, when my Twitch Prime comes out? Or why would I go throw this guy $5 while he's casting a StarCraft tournament? He's getting paid to be there, you know? And that's a tough thing because I'm not sure that there's like a lot of great solutions to that type of stuff. They're doing some weird stuff like sub-only streams and whatnot, but I think limiting your audience in that way doesn't like... I feel like that's more
having
of
a paywall like that, it seems.
Yeah.
Especially with everybody else not doing that.
It seems like it'd be better to roll the dice if I was going to do a stream here from my hotel room and just let it be open in case someone new checks it out and they're like, oh, cool, this guy travels for work. I want to actually watch more of him rather than saying, you know, oh, yeah, only subs can watch me just kind of like just vamp out and play Zelda.
When you're doing your streaming, are there games that you tend to find are better suited for you as a streamer over other games? Because I've streamed very little. And for me, I have so much casting out here already.
Right.
I feel like I'm on camera enough, and then I do this podcast. I mean, I could stream, but for me, playing games is kind of something I want to be antisocial in. But I did notice when I did stream that some games just worked better for me being on camera and playing than others.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point because I like to play a lot of games, especially games that I don't stream. And a really good example of this was there's like a game I was super hyped about for forever. I Kickstarter backed Bloodstained, that Castlevania like revival.
That's from the guy that made the Symphony of the Night, right?
Yeah, IGA. And I was really, really excited about that. And I was like, all right, I'm going to play this the moment it comes out. And it dropped. I was like, I was ready to go. And I streamed it. It was one of my favorite games I've ever played. It was so good. It matched all my expectations. I don't think it was an amazing game to stream, honestly, because I got so into it that it was a lot less about like of me interacting with my audience. And it was more like, yeah, you could basically just watch someone play the game and like really enjoy it. But there wasn't like a lot of commentary I could do on it. I'm just kind of sitting there like, I'm 12 again playing Castlevania. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, this is the best, you know? Whereas naturally StarCraft's a game you can kind of commentate on a little bit. Although with like the attention you don't and stuff, but that's one of the reasons I like battle royale games a lot for streaming.
Yeah.
Mostly because there's just so much built-in downtime to those games. Like you could complain like from like the esport perspective, you're like, oh my God, like these people are like sitting around doing nothing, but that's my time to read off sub notifications or be like, oh, hey, Europe in the chat or whatever, you know? And that's I kind of like the balance that I get off of that, and that's probably why it's like primarily what I stream outside of like StarCraft.
I always found it when I did stream StarCraft because I streamed Brood War for a little bit. I had no relationship with the chat at all. Like I would finish the game and then look, and then see all the comments and be like, "Well, that's wrong. They don't know what they're talking about." Okay, but. I would imagine a game like a survival horror, for instance, would go really well.
Yeah, yeah.
Battle Royale as well, like you said. So when you're streaming, how often do you have to stream to maintain this, or is it just like the more the better? And how long did it take you to actually build up a successful stream?
It's a hard question to answer because I've been at it for longer than most people, and there are a shit ton of people who started years after me that are, you know, dwarf me completely, right, in success wise. So I don't try. When I think about like a success and where I am is like being at like a comfortable place where I'm like, this supplements my casting income enough that I'm not worried about stuff. You know, if my family needs something, I can provide that. But from getting started so long ago, it took me about,
how many years has it been?
I started streaming on Twitch in like April 2011. A long time ago.
Whoa. Yeah. That's actually longer than I thought. Okay.
Yeah. I made my account in like end of 2010 so I could type into Muslim stream like, hey, give me attention. Because I was just a little fanboy StarCraft nerd back then. But yeah, and I got into it. And I think from that point, I didn't get like my break until like 8 months. I streamed to like 4 or 5 people for 8 months. And then one day, some guy came in my stream and was like, Baus. And I was like, what? And then like 40 other people did it. And like Maximus Black raided me at 2 a.m. And he's like, I don't know why you're doing commentary to 4 viewers at 2 in the morning, dude. But like, here's some love. And I was like, oh my God, a hand from heaven came down. Thank you so much. And I was like, that was like the Kickstarter for it. And I like met like a few of my first like longtime supporters doing that. And I think after that point, I got partnered like 8 months later. So it took me about a year and a half to get partnered from starting. And then back then we actually didn't have sub buttons. It was like the first, I think day 9 got the first one, like the end of 2012.
Yeah, very, very early on.
Yeah, but like, no, but being partnered didn't even mean that you had that, right? So that didn't come for me until like 2013. I think I got into a comfortable place around the time that that actually came out, because it was definitely the best way for like just regularly supporting broadcasters. Twitch alerts didn't like exist yet, so we didn't have all those crazy weird alerts. It was basically sub or nothing.
I remember early on in streaming, it was almost controversial to even ask for donations.
Yes, people
were
weird about
it. It was this weird. I found this fascinating, people's sort of relationship with money and their entertainers and how they view it. Because early on, it would be taboo to say, I we're trying to get 10 donations a day, right? Now it's the opposite. Now it seems like people have completely become comfortable with it and accepted it.
Yeah, I think the alert system and stuff like that actually helped a lot. Like Twitch has built in some good loyalty stuff. You have the badges in chat, right, for how long you've been subbed. You have the badges in chat for like how many bits you've given to the streamer. So if you're one of those people that you are generous, but you also like to flex a little bit, the system has evolved to support those people. And on a lot of it kind of, I think about it in a weird-ish way, it's a bit similar to if you look like the mobile game industry where most of it is propped up by like people who are just overly engaging with it, and that
by whales who are willing to spend a lot of money. Yeah,
yeah. Not that I would want to refer to like any of my viewers as whales, but they support me enough that the stream can be available for everybody else,
right?
In a way, and that ecosystem works for Twitch. It works for broadcasters and for streamers. The top 5% of people who support me are mostly the reason why I can do it, right? And then I can provide that content for everybody else.
Are you sponsored at all on your?
Yeah.
I wasn't sure. Who sponsors you?
Corsair.
How hard was that to get as a sponsor?
It was a little bit tricky. There's a whole bunch of stuff where it's like when you talk to a company, especially because my main game is StarCraft, right?
Right.
If I approach any marketing person, whatever, they're like, StarCraft, either they don't know what it is or they're like, oh, dude, that game was like forever ago, right?
Right.
So the approach has to be like, well, here's the numbers that I get. Here's how many people watch me a month. And here's how much I stream, which is, it's actually kind of like an interesting metric to balance out, because some broadcasters, like myself, because of how time I take off going work, my averages fluctuate, and I also play multiple games, which drags my averages down very low. But I can say, hey, look, I had 2 million minutes watched. This is what it would have cost in like advertisements. If you tried to buy like 2 million hits on like Twitter or something of like people like watching for like 2 million minutes, it would cost you like a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
So I'm like, here's what I'm asking for, which to me is very reasonable and this is appropriate. And here's what I can give you for that. And thankfully that was like a good part of our discussion. There's also some great folks over there, at least them specifically that, were a part of StarCraft or watched it. Like, you know, like, Frank Fields and, a few others.
So is it, and I'm asking this because I'm genuinely curious, because everybody I know that I work with out here, we're all broadcasters, right? And this podcast is all new to me. Is it, do you make more off subs or do you make more off the sponsorship? If you're comfortable answering that question. I don't mean to
subs,
put you on the spot here.
Subs, for sure. Yeah. I like subs as my stable number because it does go up and down like when I have to miss stuff, but that number usually varies the least out of anything. Like the sponsorship is nice. Like if I had like 3 or 4 sponsors, they would probably get to even, but it's a process because I've worked with some companies where I've had really good relationships with them because I try to be on top of like meeting goals for them or like doing a little bit more than I'm asked to so that they're happy. And then like I've had sponsorship deals go down the toilet because they get like 10 streamers, like 2 of us are actually doing what we need to do. And then their department's like, well, we got to cut the whole program because like half the people that we have just don't care. You know, and stuff like that becomes like a big issue with it where they're like, yeah, we'll pay you. Like I was sponsored by Quest Nutrition, like they do protein bars, and I had a really good deal with them. Like I got like a couple $100 a month. I got as much protein bars as I wanted, which for anyone listening, if you don't know, they're expensive, super fucking expensive. And their only requests were like, do like a broadcast on their channel a month and eat like a protein bar on stream. Right. And like when
that's pretty good.
Yeah, the whole program got shut down because it was like me and Dota Demon who are actually doing it.
Yeah.
And like all the other streamers they sponsored just like barely did it, or like they didn't like submit their numbers, they didn't do it enough. And it was just like, I'm like, how hard is it to be like, these guys are giving you money, but apparently like that's a thing. Like in it varies, I guess, a lot across a lot of streamers professionally, which helps from the broadcaster side, because I'm used to, you know, we do a show and someone's like, look, you have to say this at every interval, or don't say this, don't bring up this subject type
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, I guess if you're doing broadcasting, you're more used to that, where if you're just someone who streams on their own, it gets a little bit more, maybe people just get uncomfortable with it, like they're going to look like they're selling out when really they're trying to build a channel and, you know, promote themselves and, I don't know, build something. What is your take on Mixer? The competitor to Twitch, Ninja, switched teams and went over there. And Mixer, I believe, is owned by Microsoft. But
yeah,
what is your take on the platform? Do we need multiple streaming platforms?
Well, I'm always going to say I think competition is good, especially for an industry like that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
There's plenty of people have their grievances with Twitch, and they're working to fix some of their issues, but. There's no getting around it. Like Mixer's just a much smaller platform. I think the first like numbers that started to come out after Ninja Switch were that it didn't really raise their overall minutes watched on the entire platform, which is a huge negative for them. But I think the potential of platforms like that, just because of who's behind them, they can force it in interesting ways. Like I didn't know this, but I went to play like a console game with my brother. So he doesn't do like PC gaming. I booted up my Xbox, like dusted it off. I was like, okay, I have to break this thing out and update it. And there's like your games on that. And then the next menu is Mixer. I'm like, okay, well, if they're putting it this in people's faces, like millions and millions of people in America buy Xboxes, right? Like, PC gaming isn't as big. Like, they could, platforms like this could be built or, like, heavily influenced and grown just through the other tools that, like, Microsoft has access to.
Can you use Mixer on a PlayStation? I have no idea.
I actually don't know that.
This just occurred to me. Like,
But like on the Xbox, like you totally can't. And it's like one of your main menus. It's not like you have to navigate to it. It's like your top bars, like library, mixer, like store. Like it's in between there. And I think having that potential platform engagement is massive because you get into like a Microsoft Internet Explorer situation where someone who doesn't know about any of those products, if you buy an Xbox, it's the first thing you're going to see. You're going to be like, oh, Mixer. Right. And then you get that brand permanence like for the user before they even know what Twitch is if they're not big into that type of stuff.
I guess there's also a whole subculture of a different type of gamer that's on Xbox as well.
Yeah.
Like I always joke Xbox is for people that actually don't like games.
because just consoles the last 5 years, man.
Well, like I've got a PlayStation, for instance, and there's a Switch in my place as well. But I've had Microsoft products before. I've had an Xbox in the past, like the original one, but I tend to just end up buying the Japanese consoles. But there is a whole set of people who play sports games on Xbox, who will play, I guess, the shooting games that are not as common for people like you and I to play, like Halo. I don't know if you're a Halo person. I played a little bit of competitive Halo actually in college, but it was only because I was in a dorm room environment where there were enough Xboxes going around and my roommate had an Xbox, but I guess this is a way for them to potentially tap into a lot of people who might not be as geared towards streaming. It seems like PC gamers primarily are the ones that are most into streaming. That's not to say that obviously, I mean, there's tons of console gaming on Twitch, obviously, but it does seem to be slightly more PC heavy.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that would succeed there. But it's odd because a lot of people, from what I saw on the internet, thought it was very odd to ever not use Twitch. And I don't think people understand that competition is actually really good. And I don't think we have enough competition with stuff online in general. You know, there's no...
Well, you know, I think another really interesting example here is there's this whole debacle over the last year about like Epic Games Store offering way better cuts to developers who put their games on their platform. And the biggest outrage is that I saw as someone who hadn't like dived super deep into this was that it just wasn't Steam. Now I love Steam. It's super easy. Like the way that it's set up, at least for me, is like, it's awesome, right? I don't pirate games, but if I want my shit on one computer, like I can do that very easily. If I have to reinstall or move it, like it's super fine. And I'm like, oh yeah, well competition here, this just seems good, right? It's going to be better for developers in certain ways. And people just naturally resist that, you know?
Yeah.
People bring up a lot of, it's strange arguments that they don't have substantive evidence towards where they're like, oh, well, these guys are collecting all your data. They're doing all of this. And like, do you think that all of this could happen without it being found out and like pursued legally? Like, do people think that all of this stuff just happens? Like there's just shadow people controlling everything that will never like even have evidence or like the people won't find out that type of stuff.
I mean, this is what happened with Facebook. I mean, they actually were selling people's data. Right.
And it could totally be that way,
right.
But to jump to that immediately as like your first, like, I hate this because like these people are like the lizard men. I'm like, if you think that the Epic Games Store like is missing certain features, I totally get that. But as a platform, like if I want to buy a game that I'm not buying for social features, like I'm like, if I can get The Witcher on Steam, and I don't even know if this game is on Epic Games Store, but if I could get The Witcher on Steam or Epic Games Store and it costs the same and they're like, well, the developer makes more money off this, like, I don't know. Like, it seems like there's a reasonable argument for the developer to be like, well, hey, why not put it on this platform?
I mean, there's basically one of just everything except for social media, and even with that, there's sort of one of each type.
Right.
Right? It's like, there's Steam for games. There's Facebook for all the people that you're supposed to be. I guess you're supposed to be connected to on a more intimate level.
Yeah.
I don't use Facebook anymore because I have too many people that I know on it now. It's just I don't want to share this much of myself with anybody.
No.
Twitter for people who are fucking insane. I want to put points out there that they basically can't articulate very well because there's not enough space to put it out there. There's Instagram. For kind of the narcissistic part of the social media where you're trying to show artsy stuff off and kind of create your own propaganda. I mean, this is all tongue-in-cheek what I'm saying, but, you know, there's only one of each. And then there's TikTok, which seems to be super meme-y. I just downloaded that on my phone yesterday.
People want a way to just, you know, it's like Twitter's for shitting out your ideas, right? Yeah. With like, we need a place to shit out our ideas in video form. You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, it's like, it's a bit of like a market failure that like Twitter wasn't able to capitalize on that, considering all of their, you know, stuff that they've been trying to do the last couple of years, at least in terms of being a profitable company.
Yeah. But, yeah. How much have they actually changed as a company, by the way, with Twitter? I feel like almost nothing's changed on that site at all. They're always talking about these new ideas. And
I don't think anything has visibly changed.
I can't tell, like, except that they made it.
They added dark mode. That's about it.
And then what else is there? There's Google for searching, right?
Yeah. Well, they like, I mean, but they, I mean, as far as technology goes, they basically are the shadow people.
Yeah. And then you got Twitch for streaming games, but it would seem like, just to go back to the Mixer thing, it would seem like the competition would be good, but I actually worked with a streaming company for a while called Azubu. That was where I was streaming for a little bit, and they basically just paid me to stream to essentially into a fucking black hole because nobody was using the site. So, you know, I'd be streaming to like 30 people, and I'd like talk to the chat, and like nobody talks back, and it was very weird, very odd experience. But at the time, I thought, well, this will be good because in the long run, if this thing works out, there's going to be competition. If the competition's better, then both these companies have to give better deals. They have to be competitive to try to get other streamers' attention. But Azubu, I don't even think it's up anymore. But
yeah. Well, you know, it's an interesting thing because Twitch, especially when OWN TV went down like that, you know, for whatever you can say about the platform, they had contracts with big League of Legends teams very early on, some big streamers very early on, like Destiny. And despite all their issues with whatever, with paying and whatnot, while they were around and doing all of that, they presented enough of a threat that, like, if you talk to any streamer, like, contracts were way better back in the day as far as like advertising goes. I think the initial sub splits, maybe even, but like a lot of that started to get really tightened down after they were like, okay, well, it's just us. And the big thing that like Twitch did was when like sub buttons became available for everybody, they like pushed everybody off their old advertisement deals. So like no one makes money off ads anymore. I made more money streaming on Twitch from advertisements in 2012 with like 70 viewers than I would if I streamed today and had like 500 and regularly ran ads. Like,
really?
Yeah, because they tried to push the cost of that for people making money, like the incentive on income, to subs, so that the streamers would be more pressured to get the money out of their audience rather than just naturally making it by having viewers and showing them ads, which partially comes out of like stuff like Adblock, which they've been doing their best to work around, but also just like that's where they're trying to get their cut.
Yeah, that sucks. I just feel like competition is...
Just imagine...
Go ahead.
If you had... If there was... If magically Mixer was... Let's just say like half as big as Twitch. If they could even get half as big in terms of number of people using it every day, people putting money into it, the odds of being able to see streamers get like more of their sub splits, be able to be more comfortable just because Twitch feels that little bit of pressure... Like, that's massive. I've talked to folks at Mixer about, like, possible deals, and for me, it doesn't make as much sense because I do get some preferential treatment from Twitch because I've been on the platform so long, and I work with a lot
of
them.
Can I tell you something?
What?
I went to the Twitch offices. Have you been to the Twitch offices in SF?
I have not.
Dude, it's fucking cool. It's fucking cool. See, I walk in, and there was a whole bunch of screens everywhere with different streamers. And you were on one of the streams.
Oh,
you were on one of the streams, Nate.
I'm famous.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I know that guy.
Yeah, they're way too good to me. So like, yeah. I, but I've seen like terms and stuff. I'm like, well, if I wasn't who I am, if I was just a regular streamer,
you were playing
like,
in the cafeteria, by the way.
Like some of these, that's awesome. There's nothing better than eating an enchilada and watching me bitch about TVP. Like that's, I just imagine taking a bite into it right as the prism warps the zealots into my main, and I'm just sitting there like I just hit my keyboard, and you're like, "That's what I need, Mike.
That's what I
let me take a sip of my kale."
My favorite part is when he gets angry. I'm sorry I interrupted you. Go ahead, please. What are you saying?
But like I've had like terms offered to me and stuff, and like these companies are trying to do favorable deals, but you see a lot of people go through those contracts and then they go back immediately to Twitch because it's so hard to get people to want to do different things, right? Like change is one of the hardest things. I was like, well, why should I go to another site? Wouldn't it be easier for me to find another StarCraft streamer than it would to learn how to use Mixer, install their app, put my payment information on it, contact information?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I want to share my information with those guys, right? I'm already doing this with Twitch, and well, I won't have my If I follow you to another streaming platform, I lose my like sub streak, right? I'm like, I've been subbed for 74 months.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
And that's something that I've brought up to other companies. And I talked to them like, well, look, I've got a guy that he literally just, he's about to pop his like 7-year sub. He subbed when I got my button, like in 2013. Yeah. I'm like, this guy's been here forever. I'm like, what can I do for them? And they're like, we don't really have anything implemented for that. Like, he could sub now on the new platform. I'm like, well, that doesn't really.
Oh, in that case.
I'm like, oh, that just fixes everything, you know?
It's going to be interesting to see what happens now that Ninja went over to Mixer, because I think out of all the streamers, maybe him or Dr. Disrespect, but all the streamers in the world, it would seem like he would be the most likely to be able to rake over viewers, maybe?
I think his household name recognition helps in that way, where people are like, because of anybody who streams or broadcasts gaming, period, kids in almost any household in America that play games at this point would know who Ninja or like PewDiePie is, right? They're not gonna know like more niche stuff, right? Like none of them are gonna know who like DeMuslim is. None of them are, right. A lot of them might not know who like Summit is, and he's really big. He'd be like closer to that level, but he doesn't have like that sort of like mainstream penetration. But I think the idea of offering big contracts, you're Microsoft. You have a bottomless pit of money available to you. If you want to buy big streamers, I don't think it's like the worst strategy, but you probably need to pull a few more people over to get like different types of audience. Be like, oh, well, Just Ninja went. Well, screw him, right? But if all of a sudden they're like, you know what? We're going to drop $1 billion. We're going to get Ninja. We're going to get Doc and Summit and like some other person.
Yeah.
Right. We're going to use our bottomless pit of money to force a large number of like big name people to come over. Maybe that starts to do something, but it's hard to say, right? Because if it doesn't work out, then you're just left looking like an idiot.
Well, this has also been something that's happened with some of the shows that happened for StarCraft out here, is some other company will say, we'll pay you money to put this esports tournament on our channel. And a lot of the companies out here have said yes. I know this has happened with, was it Pro League? There was one where it wasn't on Twitch. It was on YouTube and then some other platform. This has also happened with ASL for Afrika TV, is that they didn't get some kind of contract with Twitch, and Afrika TV is also a streaming platform. It's right. Just only big in Korea, but so they'll throw ASL onto YouTube, because I think YouTube pays, but Twitch didn't want to pay. And then, so then there's this weird moment, especially for me as a caster, because I'm only as good as how many eyeballs I can get on me.
Right.
I've fucking casted, dude, to like 16 people before. Like on one of the early Afrika TV things where like they didn't have good infrastructure to get it out to people. I mean, it's the weirdest thing when you're casting to like virtually nobody. And you know, like some of the 16 people are also staff in the office, so it's even weirder.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, we've seen this where they try to pick up different, they'll try to pick up different tournaments and put them on there. And I guess it's had some success, but I don't know if anything else can really, really compete with Twitch.
I think there's, and this is, I guess, the nature of any like pioneering industry, right? Is there are ideas and concepts for like content or ways to try and draw an audience that people just haven't thought of yet. You know, there's no way that with an industry this young, we've tapped innovation as far as how do we make a platform attractive? How do we get people interested? Because some of the platforms that are smaller, because they don't have as much strain on them resource-wise, because they're like, okay, yeah, you know, we're in that VC stage, you know, we have a lot more supply than demand, like we can do stuff, and like they have really good video players, really good delay type things. But that was one of the other things that like Twitch has kind of gone back and forth on, like their stream delay and video quality over the years, because like at first they had a really good setup and they actually scaled it down like 4 or 5 years ago when they started to get bigger, and then after the Amazon purchase they started to ramp it back up again. But it's one of those things where it's like you can try to provide those things, but those also have to be accessible for the whole audience, and you have to worry about the amount of data that's being used, et cetera. Can you handle, if you could get that many people to tune in, like, would your platform even be able to handle it, you know?
Do you do any how do I say this? Where you get, like, a selfie stick, you walk around.
I've done it downtown. Before.
Have you done, what is that like?
Oh, it's super fun. I mean, I don't like doing it normally. I don't, it's not a thing I regularly do because, I feel a bit uncomfortable walking around and like having random strangers, like putting them on my broadcast. A, I can only control so much of what would happen. B, I just try to respect other people's privacy.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like a fun, cool thing. It's easier, I think, as a guy doing that type of stuff, because anybody who tunes in, I'm like, hey, guys, I'm walking around the beach at Pyeongchang. I did that before we did our show last year.
Oh, I didn't realize.
I literally just walked up and down that beach that was like 2 minutes outside the hotel, and I was just like, I'm just going to, and I just did that. I just had a selfie stick out, and I'm like, guys, and I just chatted, you know?
Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
Stuff like that is cool. For me, it's like I like doing it as like an engagement platform. Last year at BlizzCon, I'm like, I've got nothing to do. Rehearsals are in like 4 hours. So yeah. I was like, well, this hotel room has a nice patio. And I just sat out there and just streamed from it. I'm like, what's everybody up to? You know, and just did that for an hour. It's not like my cup of tea, but I think as like an intermediate way, like I might do something like that while I'm out here, just because I didn't want to bring a full setup. And honestly, I don't want to sit around playing games when I can walk and kind of like see this really cool city that I've never been to.
If you want, there's a place at Gangnam Station, which is like 2 or 3 stops from here, but you can there's a lot of people that are streaming, usually on a Frika TV, but they're just walking up and down the club area.
Can I go photobomb somebody?
You could do it. I don't see anybody stopping them, so that's a pretty good place to go stream, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Show your viewers.
Some of the culture of like the people who stream that way all the time, though, the culture on those channels and then those communities,
like Ice Poseidon,
they got some pretty toxic cultures. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Even the ones with like the streamers that don't do anything weird, like they just kind of put a blind eye to their own communities, which basically sit there like talking about people in the background, and I'm just like, do I want my stream to be about people being like, oh, look at that like hobo sitting on the sidewalk?
That chick's hot. Oh. Put Nate, her back on camera. Yeah.
Yeah, Nate, turn around. Oh, yeah, go say hi to her. I'm like, well, that's, you know what I mean?
So. Yeah, yeah. I've definitely seen some of those people when they're live streaming in very public areas. And you look at the chat, you're like, oh, Jesus Christ, this is terrible.
Yeah. Also, just, I mean, nothing has happened on this degree yet. And, you know, knock on wood, God forbid it ever does. But just the opportunity for people to do bad things on camera, right? Like there is an opportunity presenting itself by putting yourself out there with a camera in front of yourself for someone,
for someone
to try and rob you or hurt you.
Yeah, that was something I was about to ask you, actually, is it just seems like you're also, and I don't know if this is just a worldview that I have that other people don't share, but it just seems to me that you are broadcasting exactly where you are with a lot of people watching, that you could attract some unwanted attention.
Yeah. It terrifies me, the idea of, like, especially some of these young women that, like, go out, and it is just not safe everywhere in the world. Like, you know,
right.
In a better world, it would be nice. But especially for a lot of them, you never know what kind of creeps are hanging around. Like, what, like, and it's, I'm glad that it doesn't seem to be a huge problem at the moment. Stuff does occasionally happen, small stuff, but that's something that keeps me from being like, well, no, I wouldn't want to walk around with a camera like that, because what if some crazy guy sees me and is like, oh, this is my chance to just like get random attention.
My chance to, you know,
shit.
Or just run up and say something really racist into the into the mic. And like,
there are people on Twitch who get banned because they'll be literally walking down a street and someone will come up and just like punch them or something like that.
Fuck.
And Twitch will be like, well, we don't want people discussing and like showing this all around everywhere, so they'll like delete it, and they'll be like, look, you need to be like. And it's like, is it that person's fault? Well, they put themselves in this position where like this could happen,
I guess.
But it's like, how much can you do to prevent that? Like, how much of it should just be?
I suppose in a perfect world, yeah, you should be able to do, as long as you're not harming anybody, you should be able to do whatever you want,
right?
But at the same time, I think there is some merit in saying, okay, you're sort of attracting. You know, why do you lock your doors?
Exactly.
Right. I mean, now. Like out here, it's a bad example because my doors are automatically locked. But in Korea, I probably don't need to lock my doors, but I would do it anyways because why would I not lock the door to my house?
Yeah,
right. Just in case, because someone could theoretically just walk in there.
Yeah,
I don't know. Take my TV. Yeah,
I'm not saying I don't trust my neighbors, or I'm not saying that the people in my neighborhood are scumbags or thieves. I'm just saying that I feel more comfortable when I know that there's less of a chance of something bad happening.
Yeah. So you're excited to be casting in the Freak Up Studio?
Yeah. I mean, for me, okay, so I don't know as much about this since this is my first time here, mm-hmm. but is this a studio that's changed hands? Is this like the OG studio? You guys have moved?
No, this is the first studio we had was actually in a middle school. It was so fucking weird. Yeah, it was on the second floor of a middle school, so I have to walk by all these like little kids playing basketball.
I can't imagine like getting out of English class, going to my locker, and I could just like hear Tasteless's booming voice from the other hallway. I'm just like changing out my English book for my social studies, and I just hear G-G.
I think this school had some kind of special deal where during the school days they would show the kids how to use the equipment. It was a very tiny studio. It's also very weird if you're an adult walking into a school and you don't have kids there.
It's just like a high school AV room you guys used for GSL.
Yeah, yeah. It was a super. It looked really big, but it was actually really tiny. The one that we have now is it's quite big, I'd say. It's just about a 5-minute walk from here, but it's a very open area. I'm curious to see if you're going to find it to be bigger or smaller than you expected.
I mean, I think one thing that I've learned, probably one of the biggest things about like sets, is they. Cameras are magic, and directors are very good at their jobs. I never forget the first time I went to do, this was like one of my first things I was doing when I went out in Sweden, and I was like working with the Good Studio, and they were doing like Fragbite Masters, and I had seen the show before. I was like, oh yeah, well, the Good Studio, like they do like the show. They've like, they got this big, nice space. It was the tiniest fucking room I'd ever seen, and it was like their basement. It probably about the size literally of where we're talking, like between the two of us just having this conversation. They packed everything in. And I look at the camera shot and all I can think is, these guys know how to frame a shot very, very well.
What is he doing now? Too good.
God knows, man. He had like going on for a while, but we like never heard of it. I have no idea.
For those of you guys that don't know, Too Good, James Harding, super talented guy, super charismatic guy, was publicly fired by Gaben.
he got smitten by Gaben.
Yeah. Or he got smited.
Whatever the past tense of smite is.
Smitten is me right now with you, Nate. No, he got smited. on Reddit, Gabe, the owner of Valve, of course, the owners of Steam, he said that they're not going to work with him anymore. He was fired publicly.
He called him an ass.
And then we just didn't see him at events anymore, but I know he was working on a game or something. I met him like a long time ago in Paris, back when Blizzard did not just BlizzCon, but the Worldwide Invitational, which was like BlizzCon overseas. That's where I first met him. Super nice guy.
Yeah. I
don't know what he's doing now.
He was a great dude to talk to and work with. I think on air, right? He was a bit of like a shit poster personified, honestly. And it doesn't play with everybody.
Yeah. There's certain types of personalities that, you know, people like, and I mean the late In Control, Jeff In Control Robinson was like this, where some people loved him and some people just were not comfortable with his sense of humor. And
I think one of like the biggest things, especially like that personality, is an amazing example, because you either loved or hated. Like there was no in between. You're either like, this guy's too much, or you're like, I love just how over the top it is. You know, there's no person that's like, yeah, it's the perfect balance of professional and funny. It's like, no. He cranked it up to 11, whatever direction he was going in.
I always like people that can fuck around on a show and have a good time.
It's nice. You've had to do this. You do like the hosting role.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just, and I've done it as well. So it's the entire process for basically, if you tune into like WC or something, and you're like, whoever's in that host spot is just someone talking to you the entire time. Like, okay, we're going to this graphic next. We're doing this. Tell your co-caster to shut up. We need to move on. We need to move
tell
on.
Tell him
we need
to wrap
on.
It up.
Tell him to wrap it
tell
up.
Tell Roddy to stop talking about games from five years ago.
Exactly. And Kevin, and then you'll try to give Kev the look. And then he's like, but actually my favorite moment from Skillis' career is actually this PBZ he played in the 250 Euro Cup. And then like in your ear, so it's like Dagny's like, we need to move on. We need to move on. So it's like,
new commercial.
And when you work with a personality like that, it's amazing for the show. But it turns into this game of tug of war where you're like, okay, Jeff, like you have like some power here, but like we need to wrest a little bit of it back. And then he would give you that look where he's like, oh, I know you're trying to get us to the next segment, but I'm here to fuck
with
production.
I'm not going
to
let go. Oh, man. It's sad that he's not going to be here for this BlizzCon. Yeah. This has just been a really rough year for Blizzard and for everybody. It was weird seeing the graphic come up where, you know, I saw my Twitter feed where they announced us as casters. I just didn't have it on there, and I went, oh God.
With his giant arms blocking the two people
next to him. With his giant medicine ball body, not like taking up too much of the space so they have to Photoshop us all into different sizes so that we all are kind of the same size in the picture. But yeah, that's too bad, man. What a fucking, I'm still just shocked by it, that. It's so...
I think... I mean, it's nice, and it sucks that this is always how it is, but it shows us as well, like, just how much it brings people together, how many people cared about him and seeing all of that, and they just put out, like, that free, all of his stuff is free now. Like,
that's good.
His Caster Invitational thing, like, they put that all out today. I think they added, like, some portraits and stuff for him.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I saw something about that when I was on the train on the way down here.
I really liked seeing that, you know, just having, like, a character... like him being immortalized in the game that he loved, that it was his life, right? And I think we're all going to try and do a good job for him here.
Yeah, I certainly will. I just finals. It's just so fucked because, you know, I mean, he's basically my age or was my age, and so it's odd because the way I view myself, I think, well, I'm not done doing what I'm doing yet.
Yeah, shit, you want to do.
Yeah, my story's not done yet. So the idea that, like, you know, and you know the way he died is like a 1 in 100,000. A couple hundred thousand. I mean, that's just not normal. That's not, you know.
I would see him all the time. And the thing is, after his incident that he had like a few years ago, he was on everybody's ass constantly. He'd be like, "Well, Nate, did you get up and stretch and stuff in between? You didn't sit down and just stream for 4 hours straight and not get up from your chair and stretch your legs at all, did you?" And I'm like, no, I'm getting up, like, keeping my blood flow. Like, he was super on top of that too. And it's just. Frankly, it's just like, it's fucking bullshit, man.
It's crazy because, you know, he was actually a healthy person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He worked out.
Worked out a ton. Like, when we would go out and, like, even just, like, get dinner with him and stuff, like, it's not like the dude was gorging himself. He, like, barely, if ever, drank. Like, it was almost impossible to get the guy.
No, no, that's what's weird for me is I drink and I used to smoke and I'm still here. And I'm like, God.
You and Roddy have that, like, X-Men gene. You guys can consume infinite amounts of poison, and your body just sweats it out.
I don't know how, because Roddy still smokes, but he also drinks energy drinks too.
I think he's
got
like
one more on me now.
He's at like 4 or 5 Red Bulls or White Monsters a day, man.
Yeah,
and it doesn't make sense.
I know
he's evolved.
He's a different. We could probably drop him off in Chernobyl, and he'd just be fine. He'd just hang out there and stream in Chernobyl, and come back and be completely fine.
Be like, well, yeah, I couldn't lose my sub count, you know?
Yeah, man. Well, anyways, yeah, I hope you don't mind me bringing up the Jeff stuff. It's still such a shock. And I never actually got to talk to you. I haven't seen you.
It's been
since
a while.
When he passed.
Yeah. So it's been a long time. Yeah. It's one of those weird things because at least I feel like I've been very open in like talking about it publicly and whatnot. And
yeah.
Everybody processes this type of stuff in a different way, but. There's just something about this in particular where, like, I can't not talk about it if it comes to mind, you know? I don't want there to ever be a part of my life where I would be like, oh, yeah, well, you know, that's an in-control DT build right there, Tasteless. Like, I don't want there to ever be a part of my life where I wouldn't say that because I'd be like, well, I don't want to bring it up because it makes me sad. I'm like, no, that's the impact that it had on me. When I think about somebody... going for YOLO DTs because of losing the game. I'm like, yeah, it's fucking Jeff. It's hilarious.
Yeah,
yeah. You know?
The only time I couldn't bring it up was right after I had gotten back from the cast. I had an ASL cast the next day, and I looked at we were on the same page.
Look,
if we bring up Jeff, I'm just going to lose my shit and start crying. And I actually just can't, you know, some people might find that cathartic to see us upset. That's not going to help. I would like to just get through this show. It was actually fucked because we found out, Dan got a call and we were told right after the cast. I'm assuming that he probably passed before, but they knew that we were going to be casting. Thought, okay, as a courtesy. And then Roddy and Todd were casting when we had found out. So we thought, okay, we got to wait. We can't text them this while they're alive. You know what I mean? And then we got back to the hotel and we had to tell them. Oh God, it was horrible, man. It was weird too because he passed when I was at a WCG. The first time I met him was at a WCG. It's just so crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
I had a bit of a similar thing, too. I had, like, 3 shows that week. I was, like, doing, like, Twitch Rivals and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that next day, I'm like, well, now I've got to go on camera and be happy. And then, you know, like, those guys were super polite about everything. They're like, hey, we heard, like, do you want to say something? I'm like, actually, like, at least for this week, like, I need to keep, I'm just processing this right now. Because it's just, like, shock, right? You just can't believe that. I'm like, oh, yeah, I was just talking to him a month ago. We had pizza after WCS show, and we were talking about, like, working out and traveling and shit and his, like, stand-up comedy stuff he wanted to do. I'm like, I was just talking to him. Like, and we had Challenger for WCS the week after. And I was just like, no, I'm going to see him in, like, 5 days, you know? Like, and it was just, like, a whole...
Oh, it's a mind fuck, man.
Yeah.
No, it's super, super sad, but I mean, it's also weird just because it was him, of all people. Of all the people I know, I'm like, what? Really him?
Yeah.
You know, he was such a unique guy. It was, yeah, man.
A huge, huge loss for planet Earth right there.
Yeah, no kidding. And he was going to get into stand-up comedy, which I think he would have crushed it.
I think he would have been fucking hilarious, yeah.
Do you think you could do stand-up comedy?
I think a good bit of doing the streaming thing and like what we do.
Yeah.
There's a lot of improvisation. I mean, just in case, like if anybody doesn't know, like we don't have scripts for like 99% of the stuff that we do.
No.
Like
no.
Some big stuff, they'll be like, these parts are scripted. But like, you know, in commentary, if you're just constantly just trying to keep things interesting, right? So we kind of already do that to a degree, but I don't know if being like in a physically different place where the expectation is there.
When you're holding a microphone and you're standing in front of an audience.
Like if I'm doing like StarCraft analysis and I'm like, oh, look, Billy Marine gets cut in half. Look at his little legs running around. I'm like, you know, I'm like, that's, you know, someone might like get a chuckle out of that. But if someone was like, I'm on a stage by myself with nothing else, or like, be funny, asshole. Like, I don't know if I could do that.
You know, it's funny. Just starting to do this podcast, I struggled with not having a screen in front of me where if I didn't know what to say, I could like read a production tab. I almost did like some kind of prop, like, you know, there's, I don't know what to ask you next. So I go, well, guys, it's ZVZ. So we got to watch the production tab and wait until they either make links or more drones.
Could be a long podcast. Could be a short podcast.
Yeah. But yeah, it took me a while to kind of get in the hang of just talking and doing that. That is an interesting point you make, is that there is a lot more comedy in what we get to do.
I think that's what is my favorite thing about StarCraft. Like when I watch stuff, because I'll be doing whatever and I'll always have something on my second monitor. And 99% of the time, if it's like late at night, I'm usually watching like Supernova or like one of those Korean Terran streamers that are doing dumb mech shit. But like, I think StarCraft is very gifted and blessed in that area. Like watching, like if Roddy and Todd are like on Nation Wars, like I'm busting a gut. Like GSL, I'm like, okay, get my glass of whiskey. I'm like, it's 2 a.m. I'm just going to laugh my ass off to Nick and Dan talking about stuff that's semi-related to the game. And I'm like watching really good StarCraft, you know, like I think that's one of the best parts of the experience, is because we're all such a tight knit group and like the humor is there. We've all been doing this for so long.
It also strikes me that StarCraft people seem to have a sense of humor.
Yeah.
There's something about the game. I think because the game's so hard that this type of gallows humor comes up, and there's also so much absurd, you know, because everybody tries so hard to be good at StarCraft and it's such a crushing game.
It is.
That I think that also there's so many absurd situations that can happen once you build a relationship with the game itself.
I think you'd appreciate this as well, but like one of my favorite things to say, because it's one of the most honest things that I can say, is at some point every couple of weeks just playing StarCraft, something happens to me that I've never seen before.
Yeah.
No matter how small it is, I'm like, oh, well that was odd. Like this guy moved his army this way. I'm like, I've played like tens of thousands of games now since 2010 when the beta was open. I'm like, I haven't seen someone do that before. And StarCraft is like constantly challenging you in that way. But it also has that really, really deep emotional connection to you as well, right? Like it pulls that out of you. And yeah, I like that. The gallows humor.
Gallows humor. That's well. Dan was the one that first even taught me that word. But
yeah.
Because there's something so hopeless most of the time when you're trying to play StarCraft. You have to put in so much time to even be sort of kind of good. Even like hold your own. It's like you have no idea how long this took me to
do. Man, cannon rushes are bullshit. And then Nartosis looks at you down from like the thing. He's like, first time?
Do you get to watch Dan stream at all?
Oh, I love Dan stream. It's my favorite.
Dude, that's him in his true form, man.
And I do a lot of that as well. And the thing is like, we're in a completely sober, clean environment. I'm not playing StarCraft right now. I love the game. I have very few actual problems with StarCraft. And I love that there's a million different strategies that everybody can use. Some of them, you know, better than others. But when I'm playing the game and when I'm losing and I'm like this, normally I'd be like, you know, I think this is actually a little bit silly. But like when I'm playing the game and I'm losing to it in that moment, I'm like, dude, fucking warp prison, man. You just get one inside. It's over. You know, you just lose. You're dead. Like everything else you were doing, like doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and then you kind of get that. And, you know, Dan has a bit of that as well, where it's just like
the salt.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you didn't care about what you were doing, that would never come out, right?
Like, yeah.
Who, and I correct me if I'm wrong, but when I watch sports, any kind of sport, whether it's people playing esports or if I tune into a football game, basketball, whatever, people get heated. It's a very normal sure. part of being competitive, and a lot of it isn't just about, you know, something as I would say silly as like balance, right? A lot of it is it's just kind of like that internalized hatred towards yourself, towards wanting to be better, wanting to be a better player, be competitive, and the way that people process that, it comes out differently for everybody, right? Where I'm like, I know that I could have handled this better, but at the same time, I am projecting my anger onto what is causing my problem right now.
Yeah, with fighting games, you can, if you lose, you can immediately queue up another one. It happens in a short period of time. With team games, first of all, team games are totally toxic. I find it, I basically can't do it. I can't handle team games because other people are so toxic, it makes me insane. But with StarCraft, it's just you. A game could take 20 minutes or more, and when you lose, it's all on you.
Yeah.
And that feeling you get when you lose is just that burning.
Oh, it's the worst. It's the worst.
Feeling, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, half the time for me, I'm like, I'm losing to someone that is like, this guy probably went to work. He might have kids and a wife, right? Like, yeah. This guy's like, he only has like 2 or so hours to play StarCraft a day. He just kicked the shit out of me. I'm like, this is all I do, man. I'm like, yeah. I stream. I'm playing this at least 4 or 5 hours a day. My other job is just watching the best people in the world do it. And I have like such a close up front look. I get really mad. Like when, and then it doesn't always show. And I'll usually be like, man, fucking zealots are so stupid. But I'm just like, I cannot believe that I did not see this coming. Like, I just, like, how could, after all of this time, I not be, like, how could it not have been obvious that this would have been an area where this guy could have done this, you know?
Yeah, now that my hands have gotten better, I've been playing again, and it's so funny the process of actually improving, because you basically have a plan, you have some idea of what you're going to try to do, and then either it works or something happened, and you go, oh, fuck. Okay, I'll know to watch out for that next time. And you're just constantly trying to refine over and over and over. You know, like, it's like when you're in a ladder game. At certain ladder ranks, people are just doing shit that doesn't make any sense, but it kind of works there. And you have to know how to play against that thing as well. And you'll eventually get to an ELO where people are playing more like pros. And but yeah, it's such a... I do love it, though. I do love the journey.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the best part. I mean, the ladder is the best part of, like, I would say competitive games in general, but for StarCraft, it's really just, and you look at what people don't like. And my favorite thing is, I'm like, well, someone would be like, well, I can't believe that this cannon rush into shield battery contained versus Terran is even possible. It's absurd. Like, what are you supposed to do once you start building Tempest outside your base? Like, I never win against this. And then the immediate follow up to that is, I'm like, well, you never see anyone do it at the pro level, right? So clearly, there's a piece missing here.
This has actually been solved. It's invisible to us, but
yeah, at our level where we are, you know. And my favorite analogy for this is, like, if you've ever seen any movie where they go to hell and there's just like those cages of people all stuck together, like sticking their hands out. Yeah, they're like, they're all these cages of people like stuck together, like sticking their hands out, like, let me out. I'm like, that's us. You know? And I'm like, the thing is, this to us, these people, us trying to get out and like get somewhere, break out and actually separate ourselves from the rest of the pack, those builds are always going to be viable. You know, those builds, people are like, Nate, I can't believe you play mech versus Protoss like every game. I'm like, yeah, I'm a top like 150 player on NA, and I do that. But could I break out doing that? Probably not. But the thing is, it works because we're all stuck in this writhing mass.
This is your contribution
mass.
To the meta.
Yeah, exactly. We're all stuck in this writhing mass that like is the StarCraft meta in scene. It's like those people that are at the top because they can separate themselves in that way, and they're the people that are walking by the main characters that are like, oh God, I'm glad I'm not a part of that.
Yeah, man, it's fun. So you got any hopes or expectations for this cast or?
You know what?
But you know, we're going to be doing. By the way, I don't know when this is going to be put out, but this is right before the WCS cast out here in Korea before we fly to BlizzCon.
Yeah, my hope for this round of 16 that we're going to do is, I have come to be very pissed off by a group of Terran players known as Maru fanboys.
Yeah,
and I personally believe that if Maru was better than Serral, he would not have lost before reaching him in any of the tournaments that Cyril dumpstered everybody else in over the last year and a half.
Yeah.
So, I just can't wait to see Cyril finally kick the shit out of Maru and shut everybody up. And you know what? Since this could possibly be released after that match happens, I totally am willing to eat my own words on that.
This is where we're going to have to
do,
I'm
a huge
we're gonna have to do a second
fanboy,
take
okay?
where you say the opposite. And I'm we'll a just huge... put whichever one.
I am one of those, and the thing is, it's because I'm one of those hater fans where I'm like, I love Maru. He just, when I want him to win outside of GSL, it just never happens. I'm like, I'll tune into GSL last year, and I'm like, God, this proxy shit is the worst. And I'm like, yeah, he's good. Yeah, he's adjusted. He's a good planner. But I'm like, you put him, like, you throw him into the fire, and, like, he just hasn't produced, like, those results. I'm like, I want to see him win a world championship. And I'm like, he's just been, he's disappointed me in a way where I'm like, I want to be vindicated and see that Cyril is actually this player that has reached that level.
Do you ever get angry tweets from people where they think you're being disrespectful to pros? Does that ever happen?
All the time.
Yeah, I get that.
All the time. Especially,
it's so weird.
And you know what? It's like some players
just
are very popular and they don't do very well.
Yeah, sometimes you're casting a game and it's just not going well, and you know, you're talking about it, and then people are mad at you about it. And
you know, there's weird stuff that happens, like in the NA StarCraft scene. And
oh yeah,
there are some smaller tournaments and whatnot that'll happen, and like I'll go do WCS, and it'll be like WCS Montreal, and Scarlet will be playing Masa. Scarlet obviously goes without saying, tons of fans. She has
right.
a great history in StarCraft. She's not as good as she used to be. The results are nowhere near as consistent or as high up as they were, right? Outside of like PyeongChang, which was at the very start of last year. And I'll be like, oh, Masa's going to win this for sure. Like, Masa doesn't lose to Scarlet. Like, it actually doesn't it doesn't yeah. really happen on this scale. The last couple matches that I've had, like, I've seen, like, Masa's done very well. And I'll be like that. People are like, I can't believe you discount Scarlet like that. I can't believe you'd say that. I'm like, look at the WCS Challenger results. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, Neeb cleans up in NA right now.
Yeah.
But I'm like, at this point in time, like, Masa has Scarlet's number. And she has not, like, been able to break out in that way where she's like, all right, I'm on top. I'm in top form again, you know?
Yeah.
Because she's a player that can be very good, but can also, you know, her lows are as high, her lows are as deep as her highs are high. Whereas someone you might say, like, I don't know, like Neeb, he's maybe not considered crazy consistent, but he doesn't drop down as far when he's losing as a player like Scarlet does.
I'm super excited to show you the studio. I think our production staff's actually a little bit nervous about having this many foreign casters here.
Really?
Well, a decent number of the staff doesn't speak English.
Oh boy!
So this is gonna be interesting. I think we're actually out of time, but can we go to the after show real quick here? Because we got a meeting.
Okay.
We got to go across the street here, pretty soon. Because there's a meeting. I think not too far from now. Nate, buddy, I love you, man. This is a lot of fun, dude.
This is a ton of fun.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast, man.
Thank you so much for having me, Nick. It's been a good time.
That does it for that episode with Nathanius. Sorry. I'm hoarse. I know I'm always cleared my throat in this podcast, but I just casted for 4 days. That does it for this episode of the podcast. Now, don't forget, there's an after show. And like I said at the start, this after show, I thought actually went better and was even more fun than the podcast we did here. But you can only get to that after show if you go to our Patreon. So if you want to hear that, you know how to get it. Hey guys, thanks so much for joining this episode of the podcast. I'm going to, again, try to record some more episodes with more people at BlizzCon because I have more free time. I also don't have this much or that much work at the very end of the year. So we might be increasing the frequency of stuff coming out. And then it may slow down when you know, I start the normal cycle again. It just depends on how much time off I have, basically. Anyways, guys, I love you and I love doing this podcast. Special thanks to John Kernicki, Charlie Sheaver,
and Rohit Sinbadi.
Rohit Sinbadi. Thank you, guys. Those of you who are supporting me with $100 or more, it makes a huge difference. Again, the more support we get, the more I can do with the podcast. I'm trying to make it so that the podcast can kind of fund itself. So more money means, you know, cameras, which, by the way, we are going to be doing camera stuff when I get back from BlizzCon. I don't want to bring a camera all the way down there that I don't know how to use yet and try to figure that shit out on my own. But when I come back, we'll be doing that. But yeah, cameras, more mics, you know, stuff to enhance the show. Yeah. We're not stopping. I'm really enjoying doing this, and I hope you enjoy the content today. Be good to yourself. Let's find out what they're going to announce at BlizzCon. I have no idea. I'm super excited. And expect more podcasts after we're done. Oh, yeah. There's not going to be a podcast on the BlizzCon the day after BlizzCon.
Right. We're going to wait until the next week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because there's just going to be too much, I don't know, probably whatever they announce, if they announce stuff. I'm assuming they are after how what happened with Diablo Immortal. They got to have a win here. So, but I'll be doing more recordings, and then I'll fly back with the equipment, and then we'll start cranking out more episodes. So, guys, be good to each other. If you see me at BlizzCon, feel free to come say hi. Love you guys. Take care. Bye-bye. This podcast was produced by State, artwork by Al Aris, music by Mark Letts.